coming to understand that the truth isn't a set of moral ideals. The truth is a person whose identity is love.
Hello, and welcome to the Religion to Reality podcast, part of an ongoing initiative to help people live a more integrated life. I'm your host, Dave Plisky, joined by my friend and co-host, Father John Gribowich. I'd like to start by giving you some background on who we are and why we're here today. I'm the director of marketing and digital at DeSales Media. We're a Catholic media organization in the Diocese of Brooklyn that encompasses a pretty wide variety of services, from broadcasting daily masses and faith-based stories to helping parishes meet their technological needs.
I'm John Gribowich, a Catholic priest ordained for the Diocese of Brooklyn. I currently teach high school students at Sacred Heart Cathedral Prep in San Francisco. I also have a role in cultivating better preaching and storytelling with an initiative known as Sunday to Sunday.
Father John and I met, I don't know, 7-8 years ago at this point, some diocese event that was happening. And
I remember that very clearly. It was a while ago now.
Yes. We had an argument about CD versus vinyl, and friendship was born.
Yes, you were very anti-vinyl.
At the time I was. You've shown me the way since, but I still maintain, you know, the clear. Anyway, we don't have to get into this right now. A little bit more about the project, though, more germane to what we're actually doing here. Back in 2021, Sales Media partnered with a company called Vinia Research to conduct a study on what we called Catholic Intentional Discipleship in the U.S., and it was a study that polled Catholics in the U.S. who attend Mass at least every week to try to get insights into their faith journeys and their unmet spiritual needs. And what we were left with was a lot of very interesting data, as well as the problem of how to turn that data into valuable and practical insights for the everyday Catholic. So first, we released the overall report in 2022. By the next year, in 2023, we realized we had a lot more insights to gain, and we decided to produce a 6-part webinar series in 2024 that walked through the major themes of our learning with experts in those fields. But we also wanted to hear the stories that make those insights come alive. And that's what this podcast is. By the time of this recording in 2025, we've had dozens of conversations where we spoke with everyone from priests to lay ministers to industry experts to podcasters, all in an effort to see where this wealth of information meets the lived experiences of those out there doing the work. And what we came away with were some incredible discussions and insights that we'll be sharing with you in every episode. So, John, what are you most excited about, you know, in just across this series in general for what we're about to share with everyone?
Well, I think it's always interesting when we are looking at data, because so much of our time in when we're thinking about where are people in the relationship to God, religion, spirituality, we kind of just do that maybe with gut feelings. And there's something to say about gut feelings, but it's nice to see what the data actually reports, what people are actually saying, what they're admitting to, what they're yearning for. So I think to have the actual numbers, so to speak, on a page and to be able to see this is in fact what's going on, it gives us a great baseline to work from. And I think it's also just great having conversations with how people from all different backgrounds and in different spaces and places within the church landscape, they all tend to be saying the same thing. And I think we'll see that over the course of our interviews and the content that emerges from here. So it's kind of fun seeing convergence as well.
I totally agree. One of those convergences that we have been seeing over and over again, and this was not planned, was just the importance of listening, how listening is sacred. And, you know, spoiler alert, like that is going to be a theme that we return to over and over. In fact, I want to give you listeners a sense of what you're signing up for if you join us for this 11-episode journey. In addition to hearing how sacred listening is, we'll spend time breaking down what we mean by decompartmentalizing our lives. A part of this means adopting a sacramental worldview, that what we learn from the celebration of the Eucharist is that everything points beyond itself to God. It means developing authentic relationships without an agenda, and the trust that is built when we do that. It means prioritizing community in all of its richness and challenges. It means faith formation has to go beyond mere catechesis, flipping the script from behave, believe, belong to belong, believe, behave. It means creating opportunities that are safe for people to go deeper into their spirituality. These are some of the elements of an integrated life, which is what we're all working toward. This first season of Religion to Reality is an invitation to you to journey with us through these aspects of living and being. Every episode of this podcast is a different topic. So we decided we didn't want to just kind of record conversations with people and have that be the episode. As easy as that would be, no, we would decide to make it way harder on ourselves, and we wanted to make it topical. And so we took, at least for this first season, the 11 most important topics, the first one being decompartmentalization, which we're going to break down, and said, okay, what were some of the nuggets that we had from some of the conversations we had where we talked about this in depth, pull out those best chunks and put them here with a little bit of commentary from the two of us. For this first episode, we wanted to really focus on what we're referring to, like I said, as decompartmentalization. Basically, this idea is that people tend to view themselves as having a faith life or a spiritual life, as if it's something separate from the rest of their life. And the goal here is for people to live a more integrated life, encountering God in all that we do. This is something that you'll probably hear us as a refrain throughout the podcast series, because we spoke to nearly every guest about it to some extent, though usually from the angle of their lived experience as a Christian or in working in ministry. For today, though, we're going to tackle this topic more directly. We spoke with Cindy Black, a pastoral associate at St. Vincent de Paul Parish in the Diocese of Fort Wayne, South Bend, Indiana. Cindy has also worked in Catholic radio and has years of experience helping others approaching the Catholic Church for the first time. We sat down with Cindy to dive into the realities of trying to live a more integrated life.
This whole move from media, or actually from parish work to media, then back to parish work, could you just explain a little bit more about, like, what drew you into youth ministry? What did you find to be fruitful in that? And then why did you make these pivots?
Yeah, so actually, when the parish priest asked me to be in youth ministry, at first I said no, and he said why, and I said I didn't even like teens when I was one. But he asked me to pray about it, and I was seeing young people, like high schoolers, who had something that I didn't have in high school. You know, I had my grandparents as a role model, but I was a very typical high schooler in the 80s, especially having divorced families. I was, you know, into the party scene and actually making a lot of risky choices. And I started seeing teenagers that really got it, and faith was a very important part of their everyday life. You know, I went to Mass on Sundays, but God was very distant to me at that time. Mm-hmm. I knew that I wanted it because of what I saw in my grandparents, but I hadn't really encountered him in a real tangible way. But I was attracted, so I was seeking him, but I didn't know where to find him. And it seemed like these teens did know where to find him. And I wanted to be part of something like that. Mm-hmm.
So how did you find God in a real tangible way?
Well, the first glimpse that I had was when I had my daughter. When I held her in my arms, I always knew, like, God is love, that we're his children. That's the way people had always talked about him. So then I'm holding this baby that I know nothing about. I don't know that when she's 15, she's going to tell me she hates me and never wants to see me again. But I held this baby, and I loved her so much that, like, my heart ached. Like, and I thought, God loves me not only this much, but more, because he's infinite. So that was really one of my first glimpses. And then our parish had we still have Christ Renews His Parish, and a friend invited me to go on a retreat weekend. And it was really in the talks, the witness talks, and really going to confession, like really examining my life and confessing for the first time and receiving Jesus's mercy, that I encountered him in a real tangible way. And from that retreat on, I was changed, and I wanted to seek him. I wanted to know what it meant to love him in return.
Yeah. And you feel like that's been your driving force since, in your relationship with God, to seek him more, to know God more?
Yes. And I want others to have what I have.
Where is it like today? Like, what is your experience of God today? How has it changed, or how's it the same from
I
when you
think
had that encounter?
when I first started in youth ministry, there was a lot of talk about relational ministry, but relational ministry in a sense that you had to have a relationship with somebody so that then you could share the truth with them. And the truth was really about like the moral teachings. And through the years, I've come to know that not that relational ministry had it as this goal, but almost like there was an ulterior motive in getting to know someone so that they would listen to the voice of truth and reason, rather than the good, like that the sacredness of just having a relationship and conversation for the sake of the good of both people involved, not some outside truth. And just coming to understand that the truth isn't a set of moral ideals. The truth is a person whose identity is love. So relationships exist so that we can experience the love of the Trinity, as we come to know and be known by another person.
Yeah, wow, it's beautiful. It's so powerful. And how have you experienced that in the context of the ministries that you've been in, both in the parish and say in media and whatnot? How have you ex both experienced it, and how have you been able to try to express it?
Well, I don't know why. I feel like I have encounters, crazy encounters with people that I think the Lord ordained, and encounters with people that not everyone experiences. Right before I met Dave, actually, I was at a bar with a friend. They were donors to the radio station. And the husband had a birthday party for his wife, and they invited me. And I ended up meeting this person there, that identified as a middle-aged, washed-up dyke. And she said that we couldn't be friends because I was a Catholic radio person, that she wouldn't be welcome in my world. And I was like, why wouldn't you be welcome in my world? Well, because you think I'm a sinner. And I'm like, we're all sinners. And just getting to know her, and I think she was so taken aback that I even cared to learn about her life. She hadn't experienced that in other Christian circles. She's in her words, she was kicked out of her Christian youth group when she was in middle school for being gay, and she didn't even know she was. So just starting that friendship and just affirming the good in her that I see has just led to, I mean, a friendship that I learn more about who God is through this person. And I hope that she learns more or maybe challenges some of the ways like the Christian God has been presented to her, in a judgmental, harsh way. And then like a month later, I meet this famous atheist. Like he's got all kinds of books on God, and I need to stop hanging out at bars, but that was at a like a
No, it
beer
sounds like this
garden.
is like where your church is. I like it.
Just he kept challenging me on the God of the Old Testament, and just being able to witness to that's not my understanding of God. And yes, all scripture is true, but the word of God speaks to a people at a time, and he called religion dangerous. And when I tried to explain like the Trinity is mutual self-giving love, that we're called for every one of our encounters to be like that. And if every relationship and every encounter, I want what's best for the for the person in front of me that's made in the image and likeness of God, whether they believe it or not, or believe in God or not, they are made in the image and likeness of God. So if I can recognize that I have just as much to learn about who God is from hearing their story and getting to know the good in them than they have to get with me, if we all approached our relationships that way, the world would be transformed. And that's really what Jesus came to do, and that's what he calls us to do.
Yeah, I mean, you're clearly speaking my language. I've come to a point also in my own spiritual life where the sacraments themselves, and let's specifically focus on the Eucharist. I mean, if we come to the Eucharist with such devotion and we look at what looks to be this flat piece of bread and what looks to be wine, but we realize there's something more than that happening, like, that works a muscle so that every person you meet has that same type of hiddenness of God, right? I feel as if I'm almost at a point in my life now too where it's like the Eucharist is not an end point for me. It's like the beginning point. So it's like now this is my way to understand everything sacramentally, the whole world, especially your encounters with people, because those are the most complex encounters that you have. And I just love hearing what you're saying, because that's been a very transformative thing for me. Interestingly enough, it's very controversial thinking that way. You know, it's like, because it somehow kind of makes it as if you're like dabbling with fire when you're actually hanging out with people who don't seem to have it all lockstep in line with what it means to be Catholic. And I'm at a point where I don't even know what it even means to be Catholic, to the truth, from that criteria. Because it seems to me that if we are going to understand Catholic as universal, the reality of Christ is everywhere and is found in and through everything and every person. Because what is the option? What is the alternative to that? Right? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So, God is either everything, Christ is either everything, or he's nothing.
That's a really, I'm so glad you guys seem to resonate, John. She was someone who I've been like kind of looking forward to you being able to meet for a while. So
that's cool. We had a really fun conversation. I was really pleased with that conversation. And it's always nice when you are able to hear someone saying things that you've been thinking, and also seeing how that comes from just the lived experience, that we grow in our understanding of who God is when we allow that God to reveal himself in the people that we meet.
Totally. You know, she mentioned a really, such an important thing. Nowhere in the point did you guys talk about evangelization. And I like that, because, you know, she even called it like, you can smell this ulterior motive, right? Or like this agenda on people. If you truly see Christ in the other, as you encounter this person, she said it so beautifully. She said, I just want other people to you know, have what I have, which is to be able to marvel at God's wonder in her life, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was such a beautiful way to witness why Christians would want to, you know, that's the joy of the gospel, right? As Pope Francis would put it.
Yep, exactly.
And I think that going into the conversation with, I just want to hear how God's working in my life through this person today, or how God's working in this person's life, that is listening, right? That is this theme that we keep hearing of listening.
Yeah, I think that it's important. I think maybe for us to just start equating listening with reverence. Like, the way that we are able to listen to someone is the way that we reverence them.
Exactly. I think that it was kind of, you know, I love how, you know, a number of times, just even in that short snippet we heard, she mentioned meeting people in bars. And, you know, I kind of love that. I think it's kind of perfect for what we're talking about here with decompartmentalization, because if you are encountering Christ in the people that you meet at a bar, like, there's no more perfect example of not drawing lines in yourself between your spiritual life and your other life, right? Like, if you are ready to have those encounters in a place that a lot of people would probably say is not where they're, you know, you even called it out, like, right, you know, doing church at the bar. Yeah. That is what it's all about. That's an integrated person. I think she was a great witness in that way.
Exactly. And I think that we sometimes just miss the fact that the difference between a church and, let's say, a bar is, razor thin. Like, I mean, that, like, whatever someone is trying to seek in a church, which is some form of acceptance and community, I can guarantee you that's what they're looking for in a bar, too.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Or in a rock concert or whatever the flavor is, right?
Exactly.
In your guys' conversation, you were talking about, you know, seeing Christ in the other, living heaven now, let's say, and the beauty of kind of seeing the world in this frame. It does require working the muscle. And I just wondered if you think that there is practice and performance, like similar to, you know, we have exercises and then you also, you know, you might train for a marathon. So you're going to run on your own or with a musical instrument. You practice and then you have rehearsal or performance. You have your runs and then you have your actual races. Is there an equivalent of working this muscle, so to speak, in terms of practice as well as performance?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I think that perhaps there is this muscle may start in our mind more than anything else. For many people, I think as they get deeper or more serious about their faith life and they start to maybe read or listen to talks about the Eucharist, for example, they start to get to this paramount awareness that this is the real presence of Jesus. And they now have the scriptural backing, they have the tradition of the church. And so once they seem to have that in place, they also are now more open to some type of transformative experience that could happen within the actual context of being in the presence of the Eucharist, let's say in Eucharistic adoration especially. I think that that is kind of priming that muscle because you're focusing so much, let's just say, on one thing, that thing being the Eucharist. And I think that that type of concerted effort that is done in better understanding the Eucharist and then better being open to receiving what the Eucharist could do for you while you're in the presence of the Eucharist, I think it's similar to what ends up happening with each person that we meet. I think our intellect has to first kind of be stimulated by just asking ourselves questions like, why is it that this person is this way or does this, or what is about this person that I find attractive, or what is it about this person that I don't find attractive? So there's this kind of intellectual wrestling. And by being able to enter into the mystery, because you don't really know the answers to any of those questions, you're able to maybe have more of an experience of being transformed just by their presence rather than trying to figure them out. So perhaps that might be like the order of how it could work with how we are working the muscle, so to speak, when we're in the context of the Eucharist and how that's transferable to our encounters, specifically with individual people. And I would even say more specifically with people that maybe we have a very difficult time with or that we don't blatantly see God working in their life.
One last question before we move on here, going back to the idea of the, like encounters in bars and so forth, are there places that you've had a positive experience, you know, something that drew you into the encounter with God in an unexpected place recently? Obviously these, you know, going into adoration or something would be the expected place, right? Where like we have a very, very much the intention of practicing the exercise of the muscle, but then we get to use it in unexpected places too. And even using it sounds more conscious than it sometimes is.
Yeah. I think that's a hard question to answer in some ways because, and I'm not trying to say this because I'm kind of so advanced, that has nothing to do with it. It's more about like, you know,
you are, but that's not related here.
No, but that's not, I don't think that's really fair. I just think that I'm always at a place now where I'm expecting in a certain sense to see God show up in things that I'm doing. Like I enter into everything that way. I can't imagine anything not being a portal into encountering something that's transformative. And if it's something that is really frustrating or bothering me, I think that's more on me than it is on God, of course. It's just me not being open to what it is that is being revealed. In some ways, I don't even see a difference between what I'm doing in church and what I'm doing outside of church. I don't even feel it as if there's a difference. Of course, it's difference in essentially how you're behaving and what you're engaging with, but as far as how much God is present, I mean, I don't think there's any difference.
Yeah. I will share just that, you know, at the time of the recording, my son is 4 months old, your godson. And, you know, we had some friends at the parish who organized a meal train, which was amazing. You know, so great to have this help of people, you know, bringing meals when it was, we just had no time and had no idea what we were doing, our firstborn son. But it was our neighbors who really showed up, just over and over bringing meals and all kinds of things. I mean, truly, and just completely thanklessly, you know, they would just leave it on the porch and just text us like, hey, whenever you have a second to breathe, just know that there's a dinner waiting for you. Like, you know, and it was ridiculously helpful, but I mentioned it because these are people who, at least some of them, if not all of them, do not identify as Christian and even identify as atheists. They don't have the agenda of like, I need to be the good Christian neighbor. Those values are just in them. They are being a good Christian neighbor, regardless of if they view themselves that way. And right. So that was unexpected, not only because we didn't expect, you know, we didn't know they were going to do that, but also because I didn't expect them to be such beautiful witnesses to a life of Christ, you know, from a place where they don't espouse that. Moving on to our other conversation, we also spoke with Andrea Cerubi, a freelance journalist and former member of the Italian Parliament, who most recently has been involved in the Pope Video Project, an effort to spread awareness about Pope Francis's monthly prayer intentions, which now, of course, are going to be our next Pope's prayer intentions. Andrea has had a long and storied career in Catholic journalism and had some interesting insights on what it means to lead an integrated life. What we're trying to do with this Religion to Reality project is to help people recognize that they are called to live integrated lives, right? I'm trying to stop using the phrase spiritual life because we don't have a spiritual life, right? Like everything has a spiritual component and we just have our lives, which we hope our faith pervades in every part of it. And by the way, the messages that Pope Francis shares often speak to similar points, to live these integrated lives. So how do you think we can make sure that we're trying to live that integrated life? And maybe the answer is different for you, for everyday people, than it is for politicians. Or maybe it's not.
I grew up with Ignatian spirituality. I'm a Jesuit son, okay? Mm. So I grew up with the spiritual exercises. And there are some criteria that Ignatius gave us to understand what to do in certain moments of our lives. Mm-hmm. And there's one criteria that I love. When we need to make a choice, for example, he says, what would you do if you were about to die 1 second later? What would you do in that moment? Okay, I have to, of course, if we have to choose something, we normally have to choose between two good things. Otherwise, if you have to choose between a good thing and a bad thing, well, that's an easy choice. But if you had to choose between two good things, how would you make that choice? And he said, okay, imagine you're about to die. You're on your bed, you're kicking the bucket almost, and you need to make that choice. What would you choose? Okay. And this is great because it kind of detaches you from your fears and even from the dark part of your heart and your brain, okay? It makes you free, okay? So first of all, I would say, to answer your question, that living an integrated life needs some freedom of mind, some freedom of heart. And that's probably the most difficult thing to have because we are not always that free. And so, you know what we try to do? We try to put things in different drawers. And when we need something, we just open the drawer. But then when we don't need it anymore, we close the drawer again. But if you're, because we are afraid that if we keep the drawer open, then it, you know, it might complicate our lives. So when we talk about integrated life, as you're saying, I think we should apply this very easy rule of St. Ignatius. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate that the last thing you would do before dying is coming on our podcast here. It's very encouraging. The messages in the Pope videos that you guys put out are not just inspirational, but often are very practical and straightforward. Do you think that people might overcomplicate what it means to live faithfully sometimes?
Yeah, we all do, because life is complicated. Life is complicated, but actually, when you get to specific points, to like, if you found yourself in a war, or If you find yourself in a divorce, or if you find yourself in front of your mother dying, or with your problematic children, or with a brother who's a drug addict, or you have huge, huge money problems, then you know all these things that looked so complicated, they become easier. You don't know why, but they become easier because there's just one good way to do. And then you don't worry too much about other things. So now the problem is that we are worrying too much about other things and too little about the most important thing in our lives. There's the gospel who explains it very well, the story of Martha and Mary. Okay, Luke chapter 10, as you probably remember. So Martha is busy with a lot of tasks, hospitality, serving, and ensuring everything is in order. Okay, so she's not bad, of course. She's active service and duty and everything. And then there's Mary, and Mary's sitting at Jesus' feet and she's listening to his word. And that's contemplation. I think that at the very end of it, well, Jesus says to Martha, well, you need to focus on the best thing, the most important thing. I think that there's not Martha and there's not Mary. Otherwise, we would have two separate drawers in our lives. We should have one drawer. We are both, each one of us is both Martha and both Mary. But Martha without Mary is a non-integrated life. And Mary, okay, and Mary without Martha is just like a contemplative faith that you go on the top of a mountain, stay by yourself, but you don't live in the word. So there are two different, like, they're the lungs of our spiritual body, Martha and Mary.
What a cool idea, right, John? I've never read that passage that way until speaking with Andrea, that this idea that it's not that we have to choose between whether we're going to act like Martha or act like Mary, that there's both of them are in all of us. And it's about how do we integrate, both of these good things to choose.
Right. Integration, integration, integration. It's the word that shows up the most, especially in monastic traditions. We all live very disintegrated lives because it's our way to understand just the different things that we hold. So it's very easy to think like this person has a very active life. This person has a very contemplative life. This person is always so busy. This person knows how to understand leisure. I mean, we need like all those types of dichotomies as a way to kind of help us to lead to the integration. So it's not as if somehow it's problematic that we have, say, the dynamic between active and contemplative and just almost the challenge between the two, or just almost the sometimes the well, sometimes there's a certain type of tension between the active and the contemplative, or somehow thinking that they're at odds, or somehow they can't even complement each other. It's just simply not true. I mean, everything in this world exists on its own so that it can be placed within the whole. And so it is with being active and also contemplative. I don't think any of us act without some degree of contemplation before the action takes place, even if it's the most reflexive action there is. There's still this moment of contemplation, knowing that you are about to engage in something. So I think that it's just a false dichotomy.
I totally agree. And I think we see this in other parts of our lives, right? I mean, for example, business students have all heard the so if you study, I studied business as an undergrad, and you have your MBA. And what people will always tell you is like, don't go straight into your MBA. It won't be as useful to you if you don't have the business experience that you want to actually bring to it to be able to apply. So yes, of course, there's the network aspect. So I think it's in a similar way, like, if you, yes, like contemplate before you act, but also you need to have done some action or else you won't even know what you're trying to contemplate, right?
Exactly. There's a level of experimentation that's kind of needed, so to speak, in order to be able to understand what it is you're doing and how it affects you. And that's risky too, because I think that there is a certain type of desire to be safe. And it seems to be safe just to almost overthink things, but the problem of overthinking is overthinking, and then you don't never really make any decisions. It's interesting. I think we have to give ourselves a lot of permission to be active and to be able to just jump into things, maybe without that much thought, and see how the contemplation follows from as a result of that. And then, of course, it leads to us contemplating the actions that we then decide to take. So, I mean, it just goes back and forth.
Another thing that he brought up was the fear of death, you know, bringing about kind of this interesting sort of forcing function on, like, what do you choose? I wonder if the fear of death is a barrier for people trying to live an integrated life, because, and he mentioned specifically the idea of freedom. If we are bound up in our fears, then we might not be able to make the choice that we know we should make. We might even not make it without even truly considering whether we should make it, right? And so we have, and I know that, you know, death in particular, I love that as an example, just because it's such a taboo topic for most of the West, at least. It's not exactly what we're saying, like live every day like there's no tomorrow, but just the idea that, like, you know, if we are aware of everything, including every potential, is every moment our best moment? Yeah, I think you know what I'm saying.
I definitely know what you're saying. I think that there's always this tendency for all of us to be forward thinking of the future, thinking about where we want to be. And I think the reason why we think that way is because we're generally not fully content or satisfied with where we are. So I think it's really just kind of making a shift from realizing that at every moment in time, we actually have everything we need in order for us to fully live our lives. It doesn't mean that we stop thinking about the future, but it's not just kind of making an idol of the future, thinking that, oh, when we reach a certain age or a certain point, then we're going to be able to kind of be really living life. So I don't think it's kind of excluding the fact that it's very helpful, and it's very, I would also say, very mindful, and it's to be just a good understanding of who we are and the stewards that we are in the world, to be thinking of the future, but not to make an idol out of it.
The other helpful thing I think Andrea mentioned was the idea of that, how we put things in drawers, and he kind of used this analogy twice. So one, he was talking about like Martha and Mary existing in the same drawer, which I think is good. We talked about that. But the other idea was kind of putting things away rather than working through them, you know? And I think that this is so critical, that so often we will find ways to cope with things. That's good, right? We need to be able to cope with things, but sometimes the short-term solution is not a good long-term solution. We end up living through these traumas that we put away for whatever reason. I'm not saying it doesn't have to be that extreme, but when we didn't spend the time to work through them, they're going to come back and it's not going to be helpful. So I think part of living in this integrated life is being open to working through what's often a very uncomfortable experience, right? But this is what the 12 steps is all about. It doesn't have to be an addiction. It can be anything. I think that's a critical piece of living a life where you aren't just trying to ignore something or put it aside for the sake of it. I guess that should do it for this first episode of Religion to Reality. We hope you learned as much from these conversations as we did, and maybe a new perspective on living an integrated life. A big thank you as well to Cindy Black and Andrea DeCerubi for coming on the show. I hope you'll stick with us for future episodes where we'll tackle topics like community, evangelization, and even podcasting. Tune in next week where we'll be talking about prayer, from the personal practice to the data and trends. Once again, I'm your host, Dave Plisky, with my friend and co-host, Father John Grabowicz, and we hope to see you again next time. Religion to Reality is an initiative of DeSales Media created by me, Dave Plisky, and is produced and edited by Connor Donnelly. If you found value in our conversation, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you love the show, ratings and reviews go a long way toward letting others know about the show. Go to religiontoreality.org for more details and resources. And if you are ready to take the next step and join in community with us, check out the Called Learning Community, co-founded by Father John Grabowicz. Go to calledcommunity.com to sign up for our free online gatherings.